We're back with more of Lake Effect on 89.7 WUWM. I'm Bonnie North.
And I'm Audrey Nowakowski. Tomorrow night, Milwaukee celebrates 170 years as an incorporated city. The Milwaukee Press Club is hosting the city birthday party, which takes place at the Grain Exchange Building on East Michigan Street. The theme is Savoring Our City.
Well, Kyle Cherik knows something about savoring. The host of Wisconsin Foodie is also our food contributor, and he joins me in the studio now. Hey, Kyle, how are you?
Hello, I'm good.
Well, this is really exciting. You're getting ready to celebrate the city's 170th birthday. Looking pretty good for 170 years old.
The old girl's not too shabby.
Yeah. And the whole theme this year is savoring the city. It's about Milwaukee's food traditions. And, you know, what came before, what happened, what's going to happen, or what we hope is going to happen. I thought it would be fun to talk about where we came from food-wise. I mean, we talk about the Midwest being the breadbasket. It's being, you know, the farm to the entire country. 170 years ago, what the heck were we eating here? Yeah, and what did we build on? What traditions did we build on, you know, when the city was founded?
Well, it's so appropriate that it's Savoring Our City and the Milwaukee Press Club, the nation's oldest press club, by the way, I love that, which sponsors this event, chose Savoring Our City because of all the national recognition that our restaurant scene and chefs and so forth are getting. But 170 years ago, or even sooner, when the first pioneers were showing up, you know, we were kind of a French Yankee town, considered the Michigan Territory. And it was primarily what they caught. Of course, the Native Americans were fishing and they were trapping, and that was the original post. And I came across this great, so the first land deal in Milwaukee was 1831, and then we became a city in 1846, 2 years before the state, by the way. I love that plucky detail.
We started it.
Catch up, Wisconsin. I just adore that about Milwaukee. But I found this great piece from a letter that was before we were a city, that the pioneers were so excited when a new pioneer showed up with a barrel of salted pork that they had not finished from the trek from New York. This is, you know, you provision up the wagon with cornmeal and salted pork and gunpowder.
Things that would keep.
And not a lot. I mean, it's not unlike loading up your backpack now. Six things and we're going out in the woods. But the settlers that were there had such a taste for salted pork, and they were so tired of all of the fresh game and fish that they were getting that they were willing to pay exorbitant amounts of money at the time for cuts of salted pork.
So obviously pigs weren't being raised yet.
Correct.
Yeah. So when the city was founded, we're looking at game, fish, wild fruits and vegetables.
Lot of fish, obviously, because we're a port city and we were the most active one in the region way before Chicago or Cleveland or anybody like that. We were the port city. And what was grown just a little bit to the west of us was wheat. Now, there were some
that early.
Okay. People don't realize it. They think of us as a beer and a brat and a cheese kind of town. First cow brought to Wisconsin was by the French. There's no question in the 1700s. But pigs were preeminent. But before that came wheat. It's put it in these terms. And I'm not a legit historian like John Goethe or John Eastberg. But if you were a cowboy making flapjacks, if you were an African who was enslaved in the South making breakfast biscuits, and if you were a wealthy Boston Gion who had staff, there was a 40-50% chance that the flour you were using was grown just west of Lake Michigan in Milwaukee and milled here and shipped to you.
Ah, so that's the Grain Exchange Building.
Exactly. We were an international market maker for grain. And until 1860, 1870, it was us in St. Louis, and we were battling it out. The trouble with grain, and we saw this with the Dust Bowl, is that it's the single most depletive thing you can plant in the ground, maybe short of acid rain, you know. So it pulls out so many nutrients, depletes the soil, and after that soil is dead, literally in come the pigs and the cows. And pork became a massive industry for Milwaukee. And there's a great picture that I do when I do these talks of these ladies in fur coats at the end of the 19th century in a butcher shop where there's full pigs hanging there and all the cuts. And I call it, you know, ladies and pork because they're all dressed up. And then another terrific image that the Historical Society has of a man driving a whole herd of pigs down in front of essentially what is circa 1880, the restaurant on Walker's Point now, where Harley Davidson and Allen Bradley and all the great industries started. The pig barons like Armour and Patrick Cudahy and Frederick Layton, the originator of our Milwaukee Art Museum, all that money came from pork. And just to put into scale, so his genius was exporting the pork. Now, we consumed a lot of it here. Mader's, the German restaurant, which we all know of as one of the iconic, that Karl Rasch's, originally in 1903 started as a humble, and those of your listeners that have visited the new streets of Milwaukee know this, a humble little commissary called the Comfort, where you got sausages that were made locally, and some kraut, and a piece of bread, and probably some beer, or water, or, you know. But Layton put it this way. His genius was to export to England. Now, England in the 19th century consumed, at the beginning of it, 1.5 billion pounds of salted pork a year, but they only produced 750 million. So where did the other come from? Well, right. A lot of it came from Frederick Layton.
Right here.
Yeah. I mean, it's just amazing to think if you were a British soldier that was, you know, working on taking over any of the other places where the sun never set, the three square you got a day in a tin can was probably Milwaukee pork.
All right. So we've formed the city. We've started on wheat. Then we moved to dairy and pork industry. Mm-hmm. By the turn of the century, had anything changed or was that pretty much the way it was until very recently?
Well, we were a working class town that was making a lot of things, and all the ancillary businesses from hooves and hides had really, you know, come on. We weren't heavily into the metal bending making kind of, you know, Harley Davidson, I think, begins in 1903 or right around there. So we don't move into that industrial part. And people are eating either fairly simply cooking at home. The Kashubes, which John Gerda has done that beautiful job of chronicling out on Jones Island, there was a lot of fish coming in, and the Great Lakes were still incredibly vibrant. I mean, if you couldn't catch a fish in Lake Michigan, you probably didn't have two arms. Like that was the hindrance you would have to have. So there was a lot of fish, gardens and farms and so forth. I love that little Victorian house on Farwell Avenue, kind of right behind the Kinko's next to Ardent, the restaurant. So that was the original farmhouse for about 60 acres of the east side. So we forget how agrarian this city was and what was being grown. There were native corns, then of course all the seeds coming in and so on and so forth. But the restaurant scene was pretty low key with the exception of the grand hotels. And there, I mean, they were growing oysters in their basements. There was elk tongue coming in. There was no end to the exoticism when I look at these old restaurant menus that would have. And one, I counted 214 different menu items.
Holy moly.
At the turn of the century. And all of this is without refrigeration as we know it. So fine dining happened in the better homes and in the restaurants. And that's really where it existed. And then otherwise, it was more like the Comfort. It was just a day-to-day restaurant where you got a meal. And it was pretty simple. And it was inexpensive. And it was fairly cheap. And they were probably getting the things that they were serving you, either making them there or from a butcher shop a few doors down.
So we're talking meat heavy, probably, you know, potatoes or wheat, because mm-hmm. there's still wheat mm-hmm. things happening. I mean, this is a city of bakers, too.
Oh, no question. Yeah. And Red Star yeast and headquarters and things like that, right?
Right. And then whatever vegetables that you're either growing in your backyard or you're getting from the local farms.
Yeah, totally. Okay. Totally seasonal. We like to talk about farm to table. There was no other options, even in a city in those days. And, you know, World War I and World War II took their toll on dining across America as they did in Milwaukee and every other city. And obviously beer came in and those sorts of things. We move along, like most American cities, into some fine dining and the roadside places and the sort of what we would now call fast casual, you know, the Mark's Big Boy idea. And I'm missing a lot, but 40s, 50s, 60s. In the 70s, we had seven or eight really great fine dining places, the Frenchies and the English Room at the Pfister and things like that. And then to bring us up to speed in what we're really celebrating in some ways on the 28th, Sandy D'Amato, 1989, opens up Sanford and lights a fire that still is burning in what he passes forward. And Joe and Paul Bartolotta, 91, open up Ristorante Bartolotta. And then we can't discount what the Marcus restaurants have meant. The only place you could really get that kind of erudition was for a long time the English Room or some of their other restaurants. And the number of chefs that they've trained, those three, and that have moved out into careers, we now have across our dining scene. If you go through everybody that's on Carol's top 30 list or anybody we've talked about the show, or there's a connection to either a Marcus kitchen, a Bartolotta kitchen, or a Sanford kitchen. It's that profound. Yeah.
Well, and before we turned on the microphones, you also mentioned something that was incredibly profound, and it influenced Sandy D'Amato, mm-hmm. which is a cookbook.
Oh, gosh. How could I? Yeah.
I know.
How
and
could
this
I forget?
Started.
Lizzie,
I mean, this is part of Milwaukee's culinary heritage, too.
Lizzie Cantor Black, The Settlement Cookbook, 1901, in its 34th edition, 2 million copies reprinted. What she was doing was a forerunner of essentially Jewish family services. And she saw this massive immigrant population coming into Milwaukee. They didn't speak English, and they didn't know how to essentially assimilate. And her version of assimilation was domestic skills. If you can learn how to set a table, if you can learn these American manners, if you can learn how to cook, right? The Romans did it, you know, change the religion, change the food, conquer the people. So she did it in reverse. She trained a whole generation of first-generation immigrants in the ways of American cooking through this cookbook and how to set a table and how to get jobs in these homes, which eventually they would go on to own and prosper and have children. But her contribution to Milwaukee's dining scene through sort of a more soft, passive manner just cannot be underscored. Justin Aprahamian, the current chef, James Beard Award winner of Sanford, when he was first getting serious about cooking as a teenager, the first book someone gave him was The Settlement Cookbook.
Really?
Yeah.
Does he still cook from that?
He doesn't. No one really cooks from it. It's more of a historic document. It's funny to see in the revisions, there was a curry recipe that came in that was absolutely, you know, novel and crazy. And the first version of that recipe called for 2 cups of curry. A couple of editions later, it was 1 tablespoon of curry.
Yes.
So
They learned.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. But what it gave it for immigrants and the way that she published it, it was their mastering the art of French cooking, or better yet, the joy of cooking for them. And then they could go and get employment and start to make a life here. Absolutely profound document. And it's part of our heritage. There's no one else in America that did something like that. That's what we're savoring our city for. That's the Milwaukee celebration.
Well, Kyle Cherik, it has been such a pleasure. Now you've made me hungry.
We always end up like
that.
We
always end up like that. Yeah. And, you know, have a wonderful time at the celebration. And thank you so much for giving us just a little bit of some culinary history.
Delighted. It's a rich city on so many levels. And it's a pleasure to be able to go through the restaurants and see the paths and how they got there.
Lake Effect essayist Kyle Cherik is host of television's Wisconsin Foodie and our regular food contributor.
Milwaukee Press Club's City Birthday Party, Savoring Our City, kicks off at 5:30 tomorrow evening at the Grain Exchange. There is more information at WUWM.com.